I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
Hey, how about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I wanna drive.
Just drive, baby.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
Yes, indeed. Just about 11 minutes to go until the end of today's trading session. Time for the Drive to the Close. Back with us, Doug Phillips. He's the CIO at University of Rochester on the phone from Rochester, New York. And Bloomberg News Endowments reporter Janet Lauren. She's in our Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studio in New York. And I've already given Janet a little bit of a heads up, but we had a great conversation earlier, Doug, with Henry Cisneros, the former Secretary of Housing and Urban Development a few years ago. But he's now looking at and involved in infrastructure investing and feels like that kind of we're looking to start seeing some real momentum moving forward where investors are getting more involved, that there's more initiatives across the country when it comes to infrastructure projects, and that will certainly provide opportunities for investors. But he mentioned that things like endowments, university endowments, are interested. How does that play into something you guys are doing?
Well, I agree with infrastructure investing is something certainly in the U.S. that we need. We've got a lot of aging roads and bridges and things like that, and it's great that we're talking about it. Generally, the way infrastructure investments work haven't been attractive to endowments typically because they have a lot of government ties to them, and there's less certainty in terms of total return. A lot of them have yield orientation, so there's a kind of a tolling and steady cash flow back. They fit very well in pension plans, defined benefit plans, but endowments haven't really embraced it. And we've looked at a lot of things around the world in infrastructure for decades, and the models seem to follow that pattern of, you know, long cycles, kind of low yield. But certainly, I think for the U.S., more investment in infrastructure, just as a citizen of this country, I think we need it.
Right. We're all in on that, right?
Okay. I'm glad Cisneros is supportive.
Yeah. Well, and Doug, one of the interesting things, and I know that this is something you've been looking at that Secretary Cisneros brought up, was this idea of investing in infrastructure can't just be about like fixing the roads and fixing the airports and sort of fixing the stuff that we have, but it really requires us to think about what are we building, and especially in the guise of being more environmentally friendly, in more of the guise of thinking about renewables and all those sorts of things. I know that that's something that's top of mind for you. So how does that broader ESG playbook fit into what you're doing now?
Yeah, well, ESG, if you think of it in the largest context, which it sounds like Cisneros has been doing, there's a lot of things we can do as a country and as institutions and as people to improve our carbon output or decrease the carbon output. And one of the interesting infrastructure facts that we don't often realize is the American system of living, where we have a lot of people spread out in the suburbs and low density housing is not very efficient. The most efficient models for people living are in the cities, and we do have some migration in this country to urban areas, which is great. That should help reduce fossil fuel consumption. People don't have to commute as far, typically, in those environments too. So I'm glad to hear about that. The divestment of fossil fuels is something that Janet is aware has been a big topic for college university endowments, increasingly so in the past few years. And we've just seen it at one of the big Ivy League schools. I won't name which one, but just this week has had quite a bit of attention on this. I thought it might be worth talking about some of the results that we've studied. We did some analysis on this, and we found that about half of the schools, the bigger endowments, have some kind of policy or committee on this, and then a smaller part of that group has taken some action. But if the studies all show the same thing, which is if you divest, you lose your voice with companies' management. And there's no study anywhere that shows evidence that divesting of fossil fuels or acting with ESG as a primary component of your program, that impacts climate change, that it reduces carbon emissions and that sort of thing. There's no evidence to that. And it also doesn't change the behavior of companies engaged in fossil fuel production. So what we're finding is the study we did shows that exactly the contrary is true, that if you're an engaged investor, you can have an impact on the policies of the companies. And we saw this, you remember South Africa and apartheid. So some institutions divested, they lost their voice. The institutions that stayed engaged with the company management actually improved, the companies improved the lives of the employees and the families of employees and schools and that sort of thing. And ultimately, that was one of the factors that led to the end of apartheid.
Right, great lesson learned. Yeah.
So do you have any plans to look at proxy votes, or tell us a little bit about your strategy and what you plan to do?
We're probably going to join, our committee here is recommending that we join something called Climate Action 100 Plus, which is a group of institutional investors that works with investment advisors to encourage their companies. And they do this through voting proxies or sponsoring resolutions or direct engagement, but encouraging them to act in an environmentally aware manner, try to reduce their carbon footprint. They had a lot of success recently with Shell. You may have read that Shell agreed to tie the performance pay of their chief executive officer to progress on finding other methods of energy production that would reduce carbon. So some of these big companies are really paying attention, and Shell said that that Climate Action 100 was one of the reasons they changed their practice.
And do you have direct holdings in some of these companies?
We have direct holdings in many, many companies. We don't disclose the names of specific holdings.
And so, Doug, do you feel like this is a moment where your peers are really sort of signing on to this in a way that we'll see an inflection point from institutional investors to change their perspective and maybe get some acceleration here? Only got
that's
about 30
question.
Seconds.
Yeah, that's a good question. We did a study. We looked at where the top 32 endowments were in this country in terms of policy 2 years ago, and we updated that through 2019. And we did see some movement in this direction. It is not a groundswell, mm-hmm. but there is an increasing number of universities and colleges that are either putting committees in place or have policies. But most of them are leaning towards more engagement with companies rather than divesting.
All right, going to leave it on that note. Hey, Doug, thanks so much for once again finding time for us. Doug Phillips, Chief Investment Officer at the University of Rochester, joining us on the phone from Rochester, New York on this Thursday. And, of course, our thanks to Janet Lauren, as always, endowments reporter at Bloomberg News in our Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studio. Do check out her reporting at Janet Lauren on Twitter.